Well, hi everyone. I'm Beatty Cohn Franos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beatty Show. I'm so happy to be with you today. I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, and I'm the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships, For Better, For Worse, Forever: Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I am also the advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons and Palm Beach. I'm a national speaker, national radio and television expert guest, and I have been hosting the Ask Beatty Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. It is going on to almost 10 years. It's really amazing. It's amazing how quickly the time has gone. And I have a private practice in New York City and also in East Hampton. And for those of you who may be tuning in for the very first time and you're wondering who's Beatty Cohn Franos and what is this show really all about, but in one word, the show is really about empowerment. We talk about all of the things that we can do. And of course, do the action is the key to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships. So, of course, we talk about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships and how and what, again, to do to maximize our physical and our emotional well-being despite the stressors of life. And nobody is saying that this is easy. But I have a mantra that I have adopted over all of these years. I've been a practicing psychotherapist now, and every week when I say this, it's really hard to believe for over 35 years. But my mantra is acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can, even though we cannot change our history, the things that continue to get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And also a reminder for all of us to say no to the things, the people, and the places that steal our joy. So every week, I have a How Are You Doing segment, and let's begin with your mental health. So how are you actually doing? Are you generally happy with your life and your relationships and the general direction that you are going in? And be honest with yourself. Overall, have you experienced, as an example, a period of depression? Not just sadness that has lasted longer than 2 weeks or months, that has really negatively affected and is negatively affecting your work or your relationships. And if you're experiencing symptoms of depression or anxiety or suicidal thoughts or gestures, are you willing? And this is really the key question. Are you willing to reach out and ask for help? 10 years ago, when I first met with Dr. Gary Nell to talk about the possibility of doing an Ask Beatty call-in counseling show, I had begun with ABC Radio in Providence, Rhode Island, a number of years ago when my book first came out. And what I was really hoping with the Ask Beatty Show on the Progressive Radio Network, that it was going to be the same kind of show, that the format was going to be people calling in with a variety of different kinds of issues, and that I would be there at least once a week for an hour to be able to give people some motivation and inspiration and some positive direction. However, with the internet and people's very busy schedules, for the most part, it has not turned into a call-in counseling show. So every week, I'm able to deal with certain mental health and relationship and sexual issues. And the good news, of course, is that many of you, even though you're not calling in during the show, you are emailing calling me with questions, and I want you to know whether or not you're calling me for psychotherapy or whether you're emailing me with questions, I always, always, always will get back to you. However, if you have some questions or there's some issues right now that you would like to talk to me about, there is a live number since the show is live here on the Progressive Radio Network, and the number is 888-874-4888. So don't be shy. But quite seriously, you know, if you are having mental health issues and you're just feeling that you're going round and round and round in circles and the depression is not lifting, or the suicidal thoughts or anxiety just seem to be really, really taking over your life and enabling you to just not function in the way that you would like to be functioning, I really encourage you, whether or not you want to email me or whether or not you want to call me on the show right now, or whether or not you want to call an organization, or whether or not you want to get a referral to see a psychotherapist, today is a good day to do this, because I know that so many people have talked over the years, you know, and have talked to themselves and have said, you know, I really should get some help. The depression is getting in the way of my life. My relationships are not working. And yet what I have found is that people tend to wait too long. So again, we can't change what did or didn't happen in our history. But if you are struggling, I hope that you are going to give yourself permission with my encouragement to reach out and ask for help. And then, of course, you have to be really, really careful who you are going to reach out to, because certainly all therapists are and all psychiatrists and all people in the mental health field are not the same. And we really, really have to be careful who we let into our lives, not only in our personal lives, but in our professional and in our mental health lives as well. So if we're looking now at your relationships, you know, the real question is do you have people in your life who you really care about and who generally really care about you and who you can depend on? And are your relationships with your significant other, if you're lucky enough to have a significant other, and your children, your family, and your friends, you know, largely positive? And for example, who would you call today? If you were having a really, really bad day, and I'm hoping that you're having a great day today, but if you're not, is there someone in your life, in your little circle, that you would call, that you would feel comfortable calling, knowing that they would actually be there for you? And I'm hoping, I'm really, really hoping that your answer is yes. You know, I read an article for Dan's papers, Are You Ready to Honestly Evaluate Your Relationships? And I talked a little bit about this on the Ask BD show a couple of weeks ago. But there's something here that I think is really important to repeat again. And this was an article that was in the New York Times by a Dr. Adam Grant. And he discusses, and you may be surprised to hear this, how the most toxic, the most destructive, the most self-destructive relationships aren't the purely negative ones. They're the ones that are a mix of positive and negative. For example, the roommate who may get you through a breakup and then starts dating your ex, or the manager who praises your work but denies you a promotion. And Dr. Grant, he calls these relationships frenemies, supposed friends who sometimes help you and sometimes hurt you, but you never quite know what friend, in quotes, is going to enter your world. And these are crazy, crazy making relationships. Relationships that make you feel that you are on a never, never ending roller coaster ride, never knowing from one day to another what to expect. These are the relationships, according to Dr. Grant, and I completely agree, that are the most damaging to our health. And one study found, for example, that adults had higher blood pressure after interacting with people who evoked these mixed feelings, that after similar interactions with those who evoked negative feelings. You probably know exactly what I'm talking about, where you're interacting with people, where you have relationships with people, where you never quite know what to expect. And other researchers found that the more ambivalent relationships that they had in their lives, the more depressed they felt, the more their heart rate spiked under stress, and the more their blood pressure climbed in response to stress over the next 10 months. So this is something that we have to think about and we have to remember. And of course, we really need to do something about it if we are in this kind of ambivalent relationships or ambivalent relationships. So you have to remember that there are enormous, enormous emotional, psychological, and even physical consequences that invariably affect us sooner or later when we consciously or unconsciously allow and enable people to cross over a certain line. And for each of us, that line is different. And this is especially true if we tend to avoid and suppress and repress and deny or blame ourselves if a person's typical pattern of reacting to toxic people and toxic situations. So I guess what I'm doing right now is I'm asking you to honestly evaluate your relationships. And it is, it's truth time. It really is truth time, because you want to ask yourself, how many people in your life, past and present, have hurt you in a variety of ways that left you feeling wounded, humiliated, angry, or depressed? A few? A lot? Or perhaps too many to remember? Were they friends, family members, your partner, spouse, colleagues, acquaintances, or even a clerk at a store or a receptionist in your doctor's or dentist's office? So here's the question. What did you do? Did you say something? Did you speak up? Or did you simply feel the hurt, the pain, the anger, or even rage within your entire body and silently choose to just walk away? Or on the other hand, and this is also something that's pretty common, did you beat yourself up for being afraid or reluctant to confront the person or persons? Now, even though we cannot change what happened during those events, I want to ask you another question. If there are people, and think about this, are there people in your life who have hurt you or continue to hurt you? Are you willing? Can't do anything about yesterday or a month ago or a year ago. Are you willing to try and create an opportunity to contact them and have the conversation that you probably wish that you had been brave enough to have when the incident first occurred. Now, if this doesn't matter and you're able to say to yourself, okay, it happened a long time ago, and yes, he hurt me or she humiliated me or disrespected me, but it is no longer an issue in my life, then good luck and you don't need to really do anything. However, if this unfinished business is continuing to get in the way of your life or your relationships, are you willing, and this is a big question, to take several deep breaths and make the call or send an email saying something like, there are some things that I would like to talk with you about. Now, my bias, as long as you feel safe, is that it's much, much better to do this in person, if at all possible. And Dr. Grant, he reminds us of something that is so, so, so important, that a relationship in which you can't be honest isn't a relationship at all. It is a charade. Again, a relationship in which you can't be honest, whether it's with a family member or a colleague or a partner, isn't a relationship at all. It is a charade. So clearly, you have nothing to lose. Now, of course, there is no guarantee at all that your feelings will be validated. The person might say, what are you talking about? And would try to just completely invalidate you, as they probably did when the incident or incidents occurred. However, the really positive thing about trying to deal with your unfinished business with the person or persons is that you were going to have the satisfaction of knowing that you had the courage and made the effort to try and keep people accountable, because that is the key for their behavior, whatever the outcome. And I am so, so, so curious. I would love to be in your apartments or in your homes, just kind of seeing what you are thinking about and what you are planning to do when you go about evaluating the various different people in your life, both past and present, and whether or not you have unfinished business, and of course, more importantly, if you do, what you are willing to actually do about it. Another area that, of course, I ask you about every single week is your professional and financial stability. And, you know, hopefully you're doing well professionally, and hopefully your finances are stable enough. And again, if you're finding that you're not satisfied with your work, or that financially you're needing a little bit of extra help, are you willing to actually do something about it? A patient of mine, a 25-year-old young man, really thought that he wanted to be an executive, that he wanted to work in the financial field, and has very recently discovered that that is not at all how he is wanting to spend his time and spend his life, even though financially it is very, very rewarding. So we had a long, long talk about this last week, and he has agreed that he is going to actually go and see a career counselor and look at some options, perhaps undergo some testing to see, you know, what his interests are, even though he thought he was always going to be interested in being in the financial world. And rather than spend another 5 or 10 or 15 years working at a job that you really, really do not want to be working at, again, it's about always being willing and open to explore options. And it's going to be really interesting what's going to be discovered with this young man. In fact, he was saying that he's much more interested in the art world than he is in the financial world. And yet in his family, and this is, was a very, very key bit of information that we were discussing, his father is in the financial world, his grandfather was in the financial world, so that he felt, you know, rightly or wrongly, he felt some pressure that he needed to follow in his father's and grandfather's steps, only to find out, and it's a good thing he's only 25 years old, only to find out that that is not at all the world that he would like to be spending his time. So again, it's always about, it's evaluating how we're doing in our lives. And if we're finding, and we all find that there's certain things that we thought were going to work, there were certain things that we thought we really wanted. And if things are not working, again, it is always about trying to find solutions. And of course, my formula is problem solution. What about substance abuse? Are you concerned at all with any alcohol or prescription use or abuse? And of course, the real question is, have you suffered any negative repercussions or consequences or relationship difficulties as a result of your possible substance abuse? And if you're not sure, and if you want an honest answer, you may want to ask a close friend or partner to corroborate your own thoughts and feelings about this. In fact, I'm working with a couple right now, and the wife was telling me that for years and years, and they've been married now. What is so interesting is that when we were talking about it, you know, she was expressing her concerns and he was saying, no, 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 I only drink on weekends. But on weekends, he really drinks, and he really drinks a lot. And there have been serious, serious financial, emotional, and relationship consequences as a result of his heavy drinking, in quotes, only on the weekend. So for this particular man, you know, he was saying to me, I don't have a problem at all. Alcoholics drink every single day. Well, many alcoholics do not drink every single day. So, of course, the ball is in the wife's court, and she is going to have to decide whether or not she is going to continue. She's going to continue to live with an alcoholic who actually does abuse her in a variety of ways, not physically, but certainly verbally and financially. And he is somebody who wants to control every single move of her life, which up to this point, she has enabled and allowed. Now, is the substance abuse the biggest problem that this particular couple has? No, but it is a problem, and it is a problem that she has recognized for many, many years, and that he has denied for many, many years. And this is what happens when there are crises in our lives. If we're lucky, and I think it's important to look at crises as opportunities, we have an opportunity when things start to fall apart to really evaluate our lives, our relationships, and how we are living. In fact, there was an article today in the New York Times, the heading is Substance Abuse is Climbing Among Seniors. And this is a quote. When Dr. Benjamin Hahn, who is a geriatrician and addiction medicine specialist, meets new patients at the School of Medicine at the University of California in San Diego, he talks with them about the usual health issues, of course, that older adults face, you know, chronic conditions, functional ability, medications, and how they're working. But what's really important, and all doctors should be asking these really important questions, he asks about their use of tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, and other non-prescription drugs as well, because patients tend to not want to disclose this, but he has found this to be extremely important, because apparently until a few years ago, even as the opioid epidemic raged, health providers and researchers actually paid limited attention to drug use by older adults, concerning mostly with the younger people, working age victims who were hardest hit. Because when you think about it, you go for a visit, you go for an annual. And I have to tell you that in my entire life, and I really didn't think about it until I read this article this morning, there has never been a doctor who I have seen, not a primary care doctor, not a gynecologist, no one that has ever asked me about my mental health or whether or not I have a substance abuse problem. The conversation has never, ever, ever come up. So that we as consumers, then, if we are struggling with mental health issues or with substance abuse, it's really incumbent upon us to at least have the courage to bring up the subject if we are going to be paying visits to our healthcare providers. Because what the studies are really showing is that there is a growing problem that is really stacking up. For example, a study of opioid use disorder in people over 65 enrolled in traditional Medicare, for instance, showed a threefold increase in just 5 years. And fatal overdoses have also soared amongst seniors. And of course, there's depression, there are health problems, there are a lot of other issues that are going on with the older adults. And this is an interesting, really depressing statistic, but from 2002 to 2021, the rate of overdose deaths quadrupled to 12 from 3 per 100,000. And those deaths were both intentional, like suicides, and accidental, reflecting drug interactions and errors. The article goes on and addresses alcohol. And alcohol, of course, also plays a major role. Last year, a study of substance use disorders based on a federal survey analyzed which drugs older Americans were using. Looking at the differences between Medicare enrollees under 65 who may qualify because of disabilities and those 65 years and older. And what the findings suggested is that only 2% of beneficiaries over 65 who reported a substance use disorder or dependence in the past year, were willing to seek treatment. Because it's particularly disheartening to compare rates of suicidal ideation. Because look at older Medicare beneficiaries with substance use disorders were more than three times as likely to report serious psychological distress as those without such disorders. And yet very, very few of these seniors underwent treatment in the past year, just 6%, compared with 17% of younger Medicare beneficiaries, or even made an effort to seek treatment. So with these addictions, it takes a lot to get somebody ready to get into treatment. And I would say that not only is true for substance abuse issues, but for marital therapy, for sexual dysfunction of various different kinds, and for a variety of different mental health issues as well. Somehow we need to do a better job, and we need to let people know that it is okay, that it is okay to reach out and ask for help regardless of what is going on in our lives. And I've been trying to say this for years and years, that this is a strength and not a weakness, when we have the self-awareness to realize that there are a number of things that are truly getting in the way of our lives. Of course, we can't blame people, because it is so, so difficult for so many people to be able to access treatment. I mean, Medicare, for example, covers substance abuse and use screening. And since 2020, opiate treatment programs like methadone clinics as well are at least you're being allowed to go for screenings. And in January, following congressional action, it will cover treatment by a broader range of health professionals and cover intensive outpatient treatment, which typically provides 9 to 19 hours of weekly counseling and education. We need to be able to have people of all ages and stages in life be able to access treatment. And yet more intensive treatment can be hard to access, and residential treatment isn't covered at all. And Medicare Advantage plans, for example, with their more limited provider networks and prior authorization requirements, are even more restrictive. So again, access, early identification, and the ability for our institutions and our organizations around the world to realize and recognize the importance that the earlier that we are able to help people of all ages and stages in life identify problems and make it possible, make it accessible for them to get treatment. I mean, we would see a nation that is in a much, much better place physically, emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically, sexually, and also in our relationships. So moving along, just looking at your physical health, are you doing, again, the key word is doing, what you need to do to stay healthy? Are you eating well? Are you getting an annual physical? Do you follow your doctor's advice? Do you have an exercise protocol? Are you sleeping, or are you up most of the night looking at the computer or looking at your phone because you're having difficulty sleep? And this is really important to try at least to get 7 to 8 hours of restful sleep every single night. So all of this really falls under the umbrella of self-care. Are you being good to yourself? Are you living your life overall in ways that are in your best interest, physically, mentally, spiritually? And you know, you're the one that needs to make that kind of an assessment. And if you are finding that you are off track, of course, it's very, very important that we are going to be honest with ourselves. And yet it is our avoidance and our denial and our blame and our self-blame and defensiveness that really keep us in a downward spiral. And as I've been saying for years, it takes a lot of courage to be willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can the things that are not working in our lives and relationships. And look at the consequences. If we refuse to step up to the plate and confront our demons, the old ones and the new ones, as you well know, it becomes increasingly more difficult to fully enjoy our life. So this is my weekly motivational and inspirational segment of the Ask Beattie Show. And again, it would be so wonderful, even if we could all Zoom together and I could see your reactions, and hopefully there would be a lot of aha reactions. Yes, yes, I'm going to do something differently. My relationship is not working, but I'm not going to stay in it for 50 years and not say anything or not do anything. Or my drinking or my drug use. Yes, it is really out of control. But today I am going to commit. I'm going to commit to myself that I am going to do something about it. And maybe that involves reaching out and getting really good professional help. So again, since we aren't talking and since we are not looking at each other, I'm hoping that these words will be comforting to you and, of course, motivational, and that today you are going to take better care of yourself emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically and relationally as well. What really brings me to my latest article that I wrote for Dan's papers in the Hamptons and in Palm Beach. And this is very, very apropos of what I've just been speaking about. And this is the question. This is a big, big question. How hard are you willing to work to make the necessary changes in your life and your relationships? And that is really, it's a very, very significant question. Because I recently received two Ask Beattie emails from Dan's Papers readers. The first was from an 85-year-old Southampton and Florida real estate developer who was trying to decide whether he and his wife should continue to financially support their 40-year-old daughter, who the father claimed was a drug addict. The father acknowledged that he and his wife realized that they are not helping their daughter by continuing to enable her lifestyle and habit. But on the other hand, and this was all in an email, they feared that if they cut her off financially, that she may potentially harm herself. So he said that he and his wife needed immediate help in this very fragile and difficult time. And of course, I immediately responded, as I always do, if people call me or whether they text me or whether they email me, if people have the courage to reach out, I need to immediately, and I always do, respond. So I told him that I had an opening within a few days and that I would really be glad to meet with him and his wife. So what do you think happened? It's been almost a month, and I never heard from him again. And I was really wondering. I mean, I wasn't going to follow up. We, you know, had agreed he was going to come in, and we had a plan in place. And yet he and his wife, they dropped the ball. And I would guess that nothing probably changed, that they would continue to do exactly what they were doing and had been doing for many, many years. And of course, this was not going to be helpful to them, and it was certainly not going to be helpful to their daughter. So yes, it's been almost a month, and they chose to do nothing. Now, the second email was from a 32-year-old newly married woman who actually also she listens to the Ask Beattie show here on the Progressive Radio Network, whose husband apparently has no interest in sex. She expressed her disappointment and devastation, and this was also in an email, and told me that whenever she would try to bring up the subject of sex, just think, she's 32 years old, newly married, so she tried to talk about the issue, he would withdraw, get angry, and would refuse to talk with her for days at a time. So he was punishing her. He was punishing her by withdrawing, and was simply unwilling to sit down and tackle the issue and figure out what it was that was going on or not going on, and why he had apparently no interest in sex, at least with her. So she told me in the email that she wanted to immediately schedule a Zoom session, since she and her husband, they lived in Palm Beach. And I emailed her immediately with some suggestions about how to best approach her husband. And I sent her a Zoom invitation. Well, what do you think happened to this 32-year-old newly married woman? She too disappeared. Poof! I was ghosted. And just like that. And finally, so she, you know, I'm not exactly sure what happened, but she, I suspect, was not ready to deal with the issue, perhaps hoping and praying and dreaming that things would change. Now, she was married now. It was a little over 2 years. So, I mean, that's a very, very new marriage. And finally, I want to tell you about a patient of mine who I've treated for several years. Now, this patient, she's a wonderful, wonderful woman. She is a well-known self-help author specializing in helping people to exit toxic relationships. However, ironically, she refuses to take her own advice, and we've talked about this over and over again, and she continues to stay in destructive and self-destructive relationships. She understands why. She writes the books about all of this, and yet she wonders on some level why her chronic depression and suicidal thoughts never, ever seem to lift. Now, can you relate? Can you relate to these three people's issues? And what I have found is that these three examples illustrate, in my professional experience, a very, very common self-destructive pattern of behavior that many people exhibit. Namely, they know, it's not like they don't know, that they are engaging in unhealthy, dysfunctional relationships and behavior. They know they are doing it. And many, many know why. But despite their cognitive and intellectual awareness and understanding of the issues, they get it intellectually, they continue on their self-destructive path, again hoping and wishing and dreaming and praying that their lives will magically and suddenly become more joyful and fulfilling, despite the fact that they are engaging in behavior that could never in a million years work to their advantage. So what's missing? What's missing is their willingness and motivation and self-discipline to step up to the plate and take the necessary steps again, which many, many are aware of, and pivot in a different direction out of their comfort zone. Over the past 35 years, I've treated thousands of men and women and children and adolescents from every walk of life, every gender and sexual orientation, with every conceivable presenting problem, including, of course, suicidal depression and anxiety and early child sexual abuse and sexual assault and domestic violence, substance abuse of various different kinds, antisocial behavior, and, of course, relationship and sexual problems. And what I try to do is, from our initial first session, I attempt to build a team mindset with my patients. And this is an important first step, because what I believe and what I have found is that when the team is strong, patients will come to the coach, that's me, for advice. And together, we will begin to figure out what's standing in the way of success. And more importantly, determine a new strategy. Need a strategy and game plan in order to find a positive and constructive path. That is how successful teams function. That's what professional athletes do and successful business people do all the time. So what's the formula here? The formula is problem solution, understanding the problem, understanding how the problem came about, but being absolutely committed and razor sharp to find solutions to the problems, which means taking a very, very different path. Okay. And again, I have found that there were many, many, many situations, you know, in our lives where we hoped that our parents were going to be able to coach us and motivate us and inspire us to live our lives in ways that are really in our best interest. I mean, ideally, that would have been the best coach. The best coach would have been our parents. However, many, many people were not fortunate to have parents who were able to guide them early on. In fact, what I found over the years is that most of my own patients' issues that brought them into therapy in the first place were as a result of unresolved problems and conflicts beginning in their own families of origin. Now, we can't change what did or didn't happen in our own families or in our own lives, or we can't change anything that happened 30 seconds ago. But what I have found, and I developed a methodology many, many, many years ago, that there is a way to help people emotionally work through what did and didn't happen in their earlier lives. And this process enables all of us to not only have a clear understanding of our problems, but helps us to develop new strategies and game plans that actually work, that can lead to a much, much happier life. And I have to say that this process, it's not easy. It's not like going for lunch or going out for tea. It is difficult. And yet, if you are caught in your past, you really do need, I believe, to go through and emotionally deal with what did and didn't happen. And going through this process, it is a difficult process, but it is also, it is a freeing process that I have found helps people to finally, maybe for the first time in their lives, to be able to live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. But resistance, this is the thing, you know, making it okay to get help, making it cool to get help, which is something that, you know, we're trying to do in the school systems. As I mentioned to you, that I am consulting at East Hampton High School, which is in East Hampton. And the administration and the teachers, the psychologists, the social workers, the guidance counselors, they are finding ways to make it okay and even cool to encourage the students to reach out and ask for help. It's a very, very impressive. It's a very impressive environment because they understand. They understand that early identification and early, you know, being able to help the students to be able to get the counseling that they need as early on as possible, that that is the best possible strategy. Because if we're waiting for 5 and 10 and 20 years, and for so many people, they wait a lifetime, we waste a lot of many good years. Because resistance to getting help, it only exacerbates our problem. Like I do, I wonder what happened with the 85-year-old man and his wife and his daughter. They understood, the parents, they understood that they were not doing their daughter any good at all by continuing to enable her her lifestyle and her habit, by continuing to support her financially. And I think that resistance is something that is very, very common. And I guess one of the big questions in our society is, how do we go about educating consumers and educating people and letting them know that, letting them know that the resistance in getting help is not going to help them at all in terms of dealing and successfully resolving their issues. But the fact is that we can't do anything about yesterday at all. And what I like to think about and what I like to communicate to people is that every day is a new day. Yes, today is a new day with new opportunities. Can't change yesterday, can't change what happened this morning, but it is almost 4 o'clock here in New York City. So you have some time today to figure out, okay, what are you going to do to change the path, to change the trajectory of your life in terms of things that are absolutely not working? So there's a big question here. Are you willing? And it really, fundamentally, it comes down to your willingness and your motivation. Are you willing to take a deep breath and commit to a new and better life strategy? You understand that the old strategy hasn't worked. You understand, and I'm sure that many of you who are listening to this show right now, you can relate. You can relate to what I'm saying. You know that your choices haven't been great, whether or not we're talking about substance abuse or we're talking about relationships, men or women that you've chosen to let into your life. You're aware that your professional life or your work life is not working for you. You are aware that you have not been good to yourself and made good choices when it came to self-care. So you have this kind of an awareness, which of course is an important first step. We have to be willing to be honest with ourselves, and we have to be aware of what is and is not working in our lives. But then an even more important question, are you just going to continue business as usual and complain and be upset and be depressed and take more pills and drink more alcohol as life continues to pass you by? Or are you willing today to say to yourself, you know, my history has not worked, but today is a new day, and I'm actually willing to commit to a better life strategy. And, you know, I'm really, really hoping that, today's show is motivational for you, so that you can look at your life, you can look at what works and what is not working, and make the right choice. And that right choice is to begin to live your life in ways that are really, really in your best interest. You deserve to be happy. You deserve to have good people in your life. You deserve to wake up every single day where you're feeling a sense of awe and wonder. And in order for you to accomplish some of these goals and some of your dreams, are you then willing also to reach out and ask for help? If you are finding that you have tried and tried on your own to make the changes that you would like to make, and that you have, it's not so much that you haven't been successful, but that you need a partner, that you need a coach to help you take the next step to truly be able to improve the quality of your life and the quality of your relationship. So again, I hope that I have convinced you that you need to take some responsibility and begin, maybe for the first time in your life, to take better care of yourself. Well, everybody, it is almost 4 o'clock here in very hot and humid New York, and I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. The first, of course, is really what we've been talking about, or what I've been talking about during the entire show, is to do whatever it is that you need to do to take better care of yourself so that you're going to be able to live your life in ways that are truly, truly in your best interest. And secondly, we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to accept each other, differences at all, and come together and love each other. So again, have a really good rest of the day. I hope that there's some little thing that I have said where you can say to yourself, aha, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make some necessary changes beginning today. So again, I will talk with you next week and every week, Monday from 3 to 4 live here in New York City, and have a good rest of the day and take good care of yourself. Bye-bye, everybody.